I'm very active. I'm president of Triangle Vegetarian Society. I think, you know, people interested in vegetarianism, that's good, but I think it's one small part of the pie. And frankly, I think you guys have a much larger part of the pie. You deal with far more comprehensive issues. And we try as a group to reach out to many other organizations, to actually also religious organizations. We do an event with a Christian group almost every year. Rhonda's been involved, and Amanda's been involved with that. And we did an event about Judaism recently, and we do events with environmental groups as well. So I guess that's my segue into a little bit about TVS. I'm going to take a moment to just introduce the Vegetarian Society and then ask Randy to talk a little bit about Society for Ethical Culture. Actually, Randy, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your organization?
The Society for Ethical Culture was founded in New York City in 1876, and the idea was to keep some of the good things about religious communities, the striving for moral betterment, the community support, the good works in the community, helping those who are less fortunate than yourselves, but to lose the supernatural component. And therefore, we think in ethical culture that ethics are a human-derived thing, and that they're subject to evaluation, and that we need to think about what right behavior is. And certainly in our modern environment, there are lots of issues that were not contemplated thousands of years ago when mankind started to think about moral codes and issuing moral codes. And we have to really look at what is right today. And that's what ethical culture tries to do. We try to improve relationships at all levels, interpersonally, socially, and what right behavior is between governments. And those are the things that we concentrate on. We're members of Collaborate with Other Organizations. This is an event that I look forward to every year. We also work with the Orange County Peace Coalition, and we cook at the homeless shelter, and we do other things. So we're a community that supports each other and strives to look at right behavior, and we don't always agree, but I think the moral striving is something that's important in our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. So just a word about Triangle Vegetarian Society. We are a welcoming group. We welcome anybody interested in vegetarianism. You don't have to be a vegetarian, but we invite you to join us. Some of our events are purely social potlucks, and that's part of our mission, is to build a sense of community. And we'll get together typically at somebody's house. And our events are scheduled about a year in advance. And for the social potlucks, we just have fun, have some great food, and form community and chat with each other and spend time getting caught up. But probably about half of our events, maybe a little more than half, are program events where Rondi's on the board of the Christian Vegetarian Association, for example. So in the past, she has done an event on Christianity and vegetarianism, or we'll have a speaker about alternative healing, for example, a whole variety of topics. So we like to promote what other groups are doing, peace groups. We've done events with farm workers groups, and we've invited them to take the floor and talk about what their issues are, what they're doing, and how we can support them. We're best known, I think, for our Thanksgiving. We're internationally known for that. Last year, we had 525 people on a long wait list, people from 42 cities, 7 states, and you know, we could have easily had 600 plus. And I'm already getting requests, can I sign up for Thanksgiving this year? So keep an eye on our website about Thanksgiving. And other events that we have coming up are October 4th. We're having a potluck in Pittsburgh. We try to arrange events throughout the Triangle and a little bit beyond, too, in Farrington Village. So that's coming up October 4th. I believe that's also the weekend of the Compassionate Living Festival, which is an animal rights conference that Tom Reagan holds at in Raleigh. I encourage you to participate in that. There'll be more details in that conference.
Compassionate
Living Festival. Yeah, people are passionate about the Compassionate Living Festival. And our website, by the way, is trianglevegsociety.org, and I have some business cards for people who may not know about our group. November 1st, we're moving to Knightdale, actually, so that's, you know, going far west to far east, potluck at the home of Jenny Finn's home. November 27th is Thanksgiving. No, either December 6th or December 13th is our holiday party, and we aren't final on who's hosting it, and there's still a possibility that if you want to host a holiday party, please let me know. We need to finalize on that. And we already have a good set of events through 2009 as well. So any of you who are members who want to host an event, let me know soon. There's still some openings. Tell us a little bit about Society for Ethical Culture and Triangle Vegetarian Society. One more bit of administration is thanks to the Durham Friends Meeting House for letting us use their lovely facility. But it does cost something. It costs $30. So I'm going to pass around this envelope, and I'm going to ask for voluntary contribution. We have about 20 of us, so if everybody pitches in $1.50, which is change, so hopefully half of us will pitch in $1, half will pitch in $2, and it'll cover it. And I propose, Randy, whatever the deficit is, we'll just split between the groups and make it up. Sure. So whatever, I don't think we specified that there was an admission charge, so if you feel on principle you don't want to contribute, that's also okay. So please put in $0, $1, or $2, or even $3 if you'd like. But just to try to cover the cost here. So we're going to start the program, and I'm with Randy. This is my favorite potluck of the year. It's a nice discussion of ethics. We've been doing this for either 10 or 11 years now, and it's always in September of each year. And the question has always been the same, because I think it's such a rich question and so open-ended. The question that the panelists we have today, and the panelists we have are Ralph Balzac from Society for Ethical Culture, Barbara Zimmerman from Triangle Vegetarian Society, Vivian Ponce from Society for Ethical Culture.
No. Put that in the envelope.
That
goes in the envelope.
Ron Newman from Triangle Vegetarian Society had an emergency in his home come up yesterday, so he emailed me his statement, so I'll read his statement to you. So Ron would go next. And then Mike Conrad from Society for Ethical Culture, and our final panelist tonight will be Rondi Elliott. Now, the question is, what are the two or three most important ethical issues of our time, and what as individuals can or should we do about these issues? Very rich area, and we have tremendous panelists. I mean, we could just spend half an hour introducing any one of the panelists. So, and any one of the panelists could probably take this and spend a whole hour discussing it. And I don't think anybody wants to be here at midnight or 3 a.m. So I hate to do this, but I'm going to time the panelists. I'm going to ask them to spend 5 minutes covering this topic. And then, rather than break it open for long discussion, if there's a quick clarifying point, you know, could you repeat that website? What was the title of that book? We'll entertain that for 1 minute, and then I'll have to cut it off at that point. But hold on to your philosophical questions for the end. At the end, it's already 9:15. We're going to be pushing 9:30 or so. We'll have a discussion for maybe 10 minutes. Feel free to leave anytime you need to leave, and then we'll break. But I would ask the panelists, if you could, to stick around for a little while, and then people from the audience who want to continue the discussion one-on-one to do that. So does that sound like a reasonable approach so that we both have some dialogue and you can chalk me up being mean by cutting the conversation off, but that'll get us out at a reasonable time. So with that, let me look at my clock. It's 8:46. So again, each of the panelists, you'll have 5 minutes, and I'll give you a 1 minute warning. The final point I'll make is Joseph is podcasting this event, so anybody in the panel who does not want to be podcast, if you haven't mentioned yet, in the next day or two, let us know and Joseph can edit your comments out if you choose to. You guys won't be on the podcast, but they will repeat your questions. Okay? And I will send an email to Society for Ethical Culture, and you can let your members know where you can hear that podcast, and we'll also link it in from the TVS site. So with that, let me ask Ralph to take his 5 minutes.
Okay. I probably won't need 5 minutes, but when asked to talk about the big ethical issues, I get a little bit lost. So I go back to try and define what I think ethics is from an individual point of view, recognizing that different people have different concepts. Mine is based on the idea that we all have choice, and that the first choice that I make is to live. And my next choice is to live an ethical life. And I choose as my basis for ethics the respect for other people, to treat each other person as an equal to myself, neither superior nor inferior as a human being. This sometimes produces some personal conflict because it means respecting and accepting what other people choose to do, make the choices they make, while at the same time, I may not like the results of their choices, and I may be very opposed to those choices. And I may have to oppose them, possibly in a violent way. But still, I want to be able to think of the other person as a human being doing his or her best. And I sort of remember stories that I read about primitive peoples who depend on hunting, and that they would kill the animal, and then they would say a prayer of thanks to the animal for giving up its life to them. The different choices that people make produce confrontations. And the issue, and if there's a huge ethical problem, it's in how we deal with these confrontations. How we deal with the confrontations between Islam, radical Islam, moderatism, radical Christianity, moderate Christianity. How do we deal with the confrontation when the other side seems to be quite eager to kill us? How do we stop that and still maintain our humanity? Because in my opinion, if we take the approach that the other people are not human, that they're animals somewhat, we we have made ourselves into animals. I think a major issue today is a rising tide of confrontations where the people are very unwilling to negotiate or compromise a solution. There's a rising tide of resorting to violent solutions. And I think there is, I'm not so sure it's a rising tide or just an ongoing use of people's anger by political leaders. It seems much easier to appeal to people's emotions, to get them angry, full of hatred, than it is to lead them in an ethical path. The solution, in terms of a long-term solution, I think we need to foster education, and in particular, we need to include in that education ethical issues, so that when people are confronted with a call to be unethical, they can recognize it and respond and maintain an ethical approach.
Okay, and I'm going to summarize briefly, 15 seconds, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. So Ralph feels the biggest ethical issue is the confrontations that result from trying to respect each other, respecting people, and how we can resolve this issue is through primarily education, working with encouraging politicians not to use these against other people, including ethics and education. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, sure.
Are there a quick 1 minute clarifying questions or? Okay, thanks, Ralph. Well, let's move on to Barbara.
Okay, you mentioned one or two, three of the ethical issues of our time. I think the first one is our environmental degradation. Recently, people are talking about global warming, and so that's kind of like the main focus these days is global warming. But we can't forget about all the other degradations going on with our environment, the polluted water and the soil, cutting down forests, not just rainforests, but actually the forests near us, too. The extinction of animals, certain species of animals, their loss of habitat, poaching in Africa, where I live part-time. You know, the elephants are being decimated just for tusks. And also things like the coral reefs dying out. So there's a lot of different kinds of environmental degradation that we need to address. We, you know, also soil contamination or the chemicals from the pesticides or fertilizers, and also poor land use planning. You know, I had to drive how far to get here, you know, and it would have been better if I could have taken a bus or a train or some other way, which would be a little more environmentally friendly. And we're also experiencing the hurricane in Texas. You know, well, why are so many people living on the beach? You know, living on the beach is not really a very good idea because your house is going to get blown away eventually. You know, people have to realize this. Yes, it's a lovely place to live, but don't put up mansions on the beachfront. So there's a lot of all these issues that are part of the environmental degradation. Putting a beach house will take away the estuaries and stuff like that. And so there's just all those kinds of things. But a corollary of that is, I think, our materialism. So that's another ethical issue I'm dealing with, and it's good to see that there are other people who are very much interested in reducing materialism or our consumptionism. You know, we don't always need to go out and buy the latest fashions. I don't think too many of us are doing that here, but you don't need to follow the trends in one thing or another, if it's fashion or what book you're reading. You know, as a librarian or a former librarian, you know, I would say don't just buy the book, but go out and borrow it from the library or from a friend and pass it around. You know, just how many trees are you saving at doing this? You know, if you had the CD or the album and you used to swap that out, so, you know, continue to do those kinds of things, or go to the flea markets or give the things away that you don't need anymore. If you don't really want that yogurt maker that you bought or someone gave to you, give it to somebody else. Maybe somebody would really want it. So looking at the materialism and the consumerism, don't buy into the consumerism. I think we can all realize how that can affect us so much by using all these resources that don't necessarily have to be used. And the other issue, which is kind of more touchy, but is our overpopulation. Some people think, oh, our world can handle all the people, but I really don't feel that's true. I think we need to reduce our population, particularly in the industrialized countries, because we are the ones that are using so much more of our resources. So we have to particularly be careful about that, because if you want to have 5 children because you think you can afford 5 children, but can the earth really afford for you to have those 5 children? Think about it a little more. In Africa, people are having children because they don't have population control. They can't afford it. There's one thing or another. But foundations and governments and all will come in and heal you from malaria or tuberculosis or all these other things. But are they really rising you out of the poverty that you're going to continue to be in? So maybe you got over malaria and maybe you got over tuberculosis, but what are they doing to really lift you out of the poverty? And I don't want to say one particular country or the industrialized or the non-industrialized, but it's a global thing that we're going to have to reduce our population so we are better able to manage the resources we have.
Thank you. My summary is the 3 issues are environmental degradation, and things we can do are things like planning land use better and be aware of things like poaching.
And of course, become a vegetarian. I forgot to throw that in there.
Okay, become a vegetarian. Materialism, and she's encouraging us to reduce consumption and overpopulation, especially in the West where we use so many resources, so we should consider having smaller families.
Is that a fair summary?
Yep.
Any quick clarifying questions? Okay. Let's move on then to Vivian.
The 3 major problems facing the world and all of us, I believe. The first is the difficulty the majority of the people of the world, including ourselves, have in recognizing the inherent worth of every individual, that no one person or people are superior to another. And the right of all people in the world to have every opportunity to reach their potential. So that's number 1. Number 2, poverty. In our own country, we've got 35 million Americans living below poverty, 47 million without health insurance, and there's no excuse for this. And three, war. And I'd like to stress the difficulty most of us have in the world in realizing the power we possess as individuals. Can you imagine what would happen if 5 million Americans took to the streets tomorrow and said, stop the war in Iraq, stop the war in Afghanistan? Can you imagine what would happen? We don't realize the power that we possess, and we don't use it. And the great pity and tragedy of it is when this exists in a democracy. We have the democratic right to get out there and protest and use that power that we possess. How did we get civil rights? How did we get the end to the Vietnam War after 10 long years? How did labor get its rights? People protested. It was not handed to any of us. So, in summary, I'd say the four really major problems. One is our difficulty in realizing we're all part of the human family and we all will survive or sink together. Two, the terrible aspects of poverty. Wasn't it great to have this dinner tonight instead of us all lining up to go to the soup kitchen? To do away with poverty, we've got answers. The thing that we don't have is the will to act on the solutions we all know about. There are thousands of books written about the solutions. And many of us have lived through difficult times, and we know some of the answers. We've experienced them. And then, thirdly, fourthly, war. There is no reason for settling conflicts by going out and killing your fellow man or woman. No reason for the death penalty. No reason at all. It doesn't deter. It just shows the power that some people have over other people. That's it.
Okay, so Vivian already summarized, Vivian's three main points are difficulty recognizing inherent worth of other human beings and allowing them to reach their potential, poverty, we shouldn't have poverty in this world, and finally war and conflict. And her ways of attacking these issues are to recognize the power as individuals. Wasn't it Margaret Mead who said that nothing that a well-intentioned individual or all major progress happens with the intent, with the good work of individuals, and protest, letting people know your views. Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. The next panelist, actually, I'm going to be reading for, and that's Ron Newman. So I'm just going to read to you, and somebody can time me, perhaps, and make sure. I don't think I'll go over, but I'll read what Ron sent to me. Ethical Concerns of Ron Newman. My name is Ron Newman. I moved to North Carolina from Grand Junction, Colorado in 2000 and have been living in Fuquay, Varina for the past 6 years. I've been a member of the Vegetarian Society for the 16 years I've been a vegetarian. My awakening came in Grand Junction, Colorado after watching two videos I had checked out from the local library, Food Without Fear and Diet for a New America. Until then, I was like most non-vegetarians, never realizing how senseless and cruel my dietary choices were and how they affected my fellow humans, other intelligent species, our planet, and myself. After watching those films, I could no longer claim ignorance. Atrocious acts people commit against each other and other species is the first issue Ron wants to raise. Atrocious acts people commit against each other and other species. It's hard to separate my two main ethical concerns because they seem to keep dovetailing. It must have been in early childhood when I first heard the saying, live and let live. Human societies and countries around the world have largely disregarded this important principle. I think arrogant, hateful, and righteous conflict between different religions the wasteful and nonsensical use or non-use of our fossil fuel and renewable energy sources and the greedy quest for ownership of them are main reasons many societies around the world are corrupted to the point of justifying wars, genocide, committing intolerable suffering and atrocities against each other. I also am ashamed of my own species when seeing and hearing about the blatant disrespect, infliction of unimaginable suffering, and the atrocities we commit against other intelligent species and life forms. If we want the rest of the world to respect our customs and lifestyle, we need to respect theirs. I also mean this for other life forms. I think the practice of live and let live could be a very simple and effective solution. Second issue Ron raises is environmental pollution and global warming. Live and let live also applies to my second main concern. Imprisoning, mutilating, and murdering other intelligent species for our own ill-advised consumption is the most important contributing factor that causes the most destructive climate changes and global warming. These changes are largely caused by methane gas and other waste products from animals that we breed. Some other factors are: 1, animal waste is contaminating our groundwater and natural waterways. 2, we are destroying our forests to create grazing lands, thereby reducing our planet's ability to neutralize CO2, reducing the Earth's ability to produce oxygen, changing fertile lands into deserts incapable of food production, and causing soil erosion. And 3, spreading animal-borne diseases to humans. A complete disregard for our environment, unrestrained and excessive burning of fossil fuels is another main source of environmental pollution. I think greed and the quest of powerful people for control of energy or money, property, and power have been the motivation for the suppression of many available technologies and have kept us overly dependent on a process that is killing our planet. Employing available technologies and renewable alternative energies like wind, solar, geothermal, hydro, and wave would tremendously reduce pollution from energy use. Our prudent use of natural resources and products made from these resources would also greatly help in ensuring a sustainable environment for our children and grandchildren. I believe a benevolent, divine, creative intelligence that I call Creator gave us a complete and sustainable ecosystem. If we have any gratitude for these gifts and blessings, we can show it through reverence and good stewardship. I think prudent use, protection, maintenance, and respect are all parts of good stewardship. Recognizing our own arrogant, elevated sense of importance and infallibility could be the first step in avoiding the inadvertent destruction of the perfect order, quote unquote, an environment that we are so dependent on for survival. And just a footnote, it's the end of Ron's talking, now Dilip's speaking. Our last potluck was at Ron's house. He's not only a vegan, but he's moved beyond, and his home is geothermal, has geothermal and solar power. He sells back to the utilities, so I apologize that he can't be with us, and I probably did a poor job expressing his thoughts, but hopefully you got a gist of what he would have said if he were with us. And I can't clarify anything, so I will move on to, I guess, Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm a biologist, so I thought I would give two or three of the bioethical problems which we may all be facing soon. The first one is probably not the world's most difficult, most world important problem, but it probably has the greatest philosophical implications for you into philosophy, is should mankind make life? Now this also relates to me personally, because I worked in the laboratory of Clyde Hutchison here at UNC, and the project was to make larger and larger DNAs and essentially make life, as the newspapers report it. In other words, make an entire bacterial chromosome, insert and make it the way you want it. You can put in the genes you want and put it back into a bacteria, and then you will have made life. At least that's the way the newspapers called it. Now, along the way to do this, Clyde, we consulted someone called Arthur Kaplan, who's a very famous bioethicist who you may have heard of, and Clyde's got a very wry sense of humor, and he calls Arthur Kaplan the best ethicist money can buy. And so we hired Arthur Kaplan from Pennsylvania, and he said it would be okay to make life. And so that helped on the grants and things. But when this got in the papers, and you may have even read about it, the response has gone from that all the way to the Pope, who says it's terrible and we are going on to do what should be the act of God. But to that, I'd say if it can be, Clyde's no longer at UNC. He's gone to work at the, he's gone to the Venter Institute. And if it can be done, I expect Clyde's going to do it. So that's one problem. A couple of more things are actually going to become more and more important in our lives. It was genetic engineering. Certainly, people are doing genetic prenatal screening right now. Most people, or many older couples, have the screening. Because of this, Down syndrome is greatly reduced lately, because if you can detect it, and if you so desire, and most people do, would be to terminate the pregnancy. Not everybody does, witness Sarah Palin, but in general, anyway, because of that, Down syndrome has been reduced. And prenatal screening is getting more and more powerful and is for many more and more conditions. And another, and I think the parents should have the right to take the information and do what they will do with it. And even, and just coming soon is going to be genetic engineering. You'll be able to modify your baby. And that's a bit scarier, modifying the genes of your child to do something different. And it's going to be coming. We do it for mice already, and we'll probably do it for people, or the capacity will be there. And I think it should be up to the parents if anybody's going to do it. It's up then. Darwin would say, if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I think the group should be least involved would be the government, should not be telling people what to do with their children. So I'm going to be libertarian about the couples. It should be their choice, prenatal screening all the way up.
Okay, so if I could summarize, Mike really identified one overarching issue, and that is, should we make life? And it involves all sorts of other sub-issues, including genetically modifying organisms. And what we should do about that, his primary argument is that of knowledge. We should know about these issues and use our knowledge to make informed decisions as individuals. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
30-second summary of your of your wisdom, 5-minute wisdom. Any quick clarifying questions? I know you have lots of good philosophical questions that you're holding on to, but any quick clarifying ones?